This message comes from Greenlight. Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. With Greenlight, you can send money to kids quickly, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on what your kids are spending with real-time notifications. Join millions of parents and kids building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get started risk-free at greenlight.com/iHeart.
This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I am Gaius, John Batchelor. Germanicus, Mark of Leos, is here. We are in Londinium. It is 90 AD, enjoying the fruits of the might of Rome. We have a cup of wine, and we're philosophizing about present circumstances of our semi-divine emperor, Domitian, and the future. We can see the 21st century dimly. We can see it, and there are surprising parallels, analogies, lessons that we can draw from our present circumstance in Rome at the edge of the empire and what appears to be the circumstances of Europe and the United States in the 21st century at war in Ukraine. Germanicus, I mentioned that Domitian bogged down along the Danube with the Dacian kingdom. This struggle, we know, will go on for several years, and Domitian will claim a triumph, but he won't solve it. In fact, he's an enemy of the Senate, and the Senate will dispatch him. There will be more wars along the Danube with the Dacian kingdom, probably because Domitian was obliged to supplement the Dacian kingdom, which built better and better forces. It also destroyed not one but two of our commanders and is not apologetic about standing up to Rome. The reason I raise this is because Rome's version of making peace was to keep at it for years, for decades, permanently, until it was Cartago Delenda Est. How do you measure what Rome did along the Danube frontier, eventually reducing the Dacians to a supplement of the Roman Empire, and what we observe going on in Ukraine as Moscow, the Rome of its continent, is seeking to reduce the Ukrainian kingdom? Good evening to you, Germanicus.
Good evening, Gaius. You know, the situation that Rome faced over the many imperial decades, beginning with Augustus, is not so very different from that faced by the U.S. In the period after the fall of the Soviet Union. And what I mean to say by this is that Rome was always unable to stop and lay down its plant its flag and lay down a border and say, well, this is enough. There was always another kingdom across the river or across a mountain range, and that that kingdom would pose a threat. And it was really the memory of the many Gallic invasions of Italy and the way in which Rome was made prostrate by Brennu, the Gallic chieftain, centuries before, that pushed Caesar on to want to tame Gaul. But as soon as Gaul was broken and prostrate, there was a Germany across the Rhine. And Germany was too much of a threat to keep away from, and so the Romans went into Germany, and there suffered an enormous, humiliating, shameful defeat at the hands of Arminius, and the Romans, led by the great general Germanicus, campaigned there for years and years, but were unable to subdue Germany. And the reason the Germans decided not to keep expanding, say, from the Rhine River to the Elbe, was that after Arminius died, the German tribes essentially broke up their confederation and ceased to be the kind of huge threat they had been earlier under Ariovistus and then Arminius. And the situation in Dacia was different, though. Dacia is really where Romania is now and represented a substantially united kingdom, and its various tribes, there were four main tribes, had been united into a kingdom that actually could put perhaps a quarter of a million warriors on the field and had hundreds of, literally hundreds of thousands of tons of silver and gold and amazing metalworking capability, et cetera, et cetera. And so therefore, Dacia represented a threat. And so it was not possible to come to some sort of long-term truce. Once Rome went to war with Dacia, it had to be brought down. And this is in many ways what has happened to the U.S. With NATO expansion. One might have thought at the end of the Cold War that, Russia is prostrate and we can extend a hand to them, embrace them, bring them into Europe and make them a part of NATO. Well, we did not do that. And instead, we filled in the buffer vacuum between what had been Western European NATO and Russia by making satellite states of the Soviet Union, new NATO members like the Baltics, Poland, Hungary, and Romania. And at that point, we meaning the West, stood along the borders of what had been the Russian Empire in Tsarist times. And it was here that the U.S. decided they couldn't allow for this untamed presence on the part of Ukraine and Belarus. They couldn't allow a reassertion of potential revanchist Russia to gain a foothold in either of those two places. And so we decided we had to move on into them. And we embarked, starting with the Orange Revolution, which was around 2004 or 5, and continued to work actively to bring Ukraine into NATO, so actively in 2014 that we ended up precipitating a civil war within Ukraine, which is still going on, by the way, not simply a Russian invasion, but an actual civil war. Russia intervened, and we found ourselves in a position where we had created the very kind of situation that faced Domitian and then Trajan. Namely, we provoked and helped to foster a very powerful state that had become renewed as an adversary, and now we were contending over this buffer area. And this is, in fact, the story of many empires. It was the story of the expansion of the British Empire, for example, and the British had India, but then there was a threat to India from Afghanistan, so the British had to move into Afghanistan, and then there were issues in Assam because of Burma, so then the British had to move into Burma, and it went on and on until it couldn't go on any longer, which is essentially what happened to Rome in the second century. It reached, as you just said, the limits of its expansion. Well, the U.S. is at the limits of its expansion now and has frankly gone too far. And when Rome had to face an enemy of greater size than the Dacians, which would be, of course, Parthia or Persia, the Romans went into Armenia and then the Persians countered. And for several centuries, and we're talking here, 5 centuries of constant back and forth wars between Rome and Persia, Armenia was always the buffer state, along with the upper Tigris and Euphrates, the upper Mesopotamian lands, and which are now Kurdistan. And so there was endless war there. And so I fear that we are in that situation again. We have a long war.
We're looking at the makings of a long war because Rome had the resources to reload every time it was defeated along the Danube.
Right.
The Dacians were keen on denying the Romans. Eventually, of course, they will be subdued by Domitian's successors, Trajan and Hadrian. They will be subdued and become a client state of Rome. That is an imaginable end for all parts of the former Soviet Union. They become client states. What is fresh here, and Germanicus, you and I have observed this, what is fresh here is that it is a surprise to NATO, to the United States, that this picture has been played before. We're seeing a picture that is commonplace for 2,000 years. The wars along the Danube, the wars along the Rhine, the wars along the Dnieper, which is what they're fighting now. So when we come back, I want to introduce, we've talked grand strategy for 2,000 years. I want to introduce the tactical decision by Moscow, which is here the surrogate for Rome, to replace one commander who, or several commanders who were inadequate with one commander who's said to be a warfighter. Germanicus, Michael Vlahos, I am Gaius John Batchelor. This is the Friends of History Debating Society in Londinium, 90 AD, philosophizing before we are off to the theater.
What if your top salesperson was 1,000 times more efficient? And what if a limitless digital workforce helped your number one find leads? A super team working 24/7 on their behalf. Thinking, acting, and solving complex tasks so more deals closed. What if with every sale, each customer felt like they were the only customer? That would be one very efficient sales leader. Now, imagine if every person on your team worked to the power of 1,000. They can with Agentforce, the powerful AI from Salesforce.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.